broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, Happy Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Let's start the week by going up front to get the latest on Wisconsin politics statewide with Channel 12 political director Matt Smith on Point Taken.
As he joins us, this time on the phone, though.
On the phone. He's on assignment. En route.
Yeah, hey, Matt Smith.
To an undisclosed location.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Yeah,
on the road on a Monday morning.
You're living the life of a busy journalist, and you're one of the best at it. Upfront, great program, political show that features a lot of the people that are making news, game changers, candidates, elected officials. And in this week's episode, we're going to start off with David Crowley, Milwaukee County Executive, talking about budget challenges. So you talked to the county executive. I know that they've, a couple years ago, when things were looking a little more rosy when it came to budgets, they were feeling good, sowing their oats, all that stuff. But now there's more challenges, and the energy prices aren't helping.
So it was kind of fascinating this week. We saw David Crowley included a number of candidates either coming out with plans or attempting to take more of a direct aim at President Trump. And it'll be curious to see, guys, if this is where the primary heads. But from David Crowley's perspective, the Milwaukee County executive, he really started to hone in on the rising fuel prices, the Iran war, blaming the president for that. And as a result, he says the county could face a roughly $1 million deficit if these rising fuel prices continue to surge, because their prices continue to surge as they're buying fuel for all their county vehicles.
Let's hear from Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley on Upfront.
To those who would say, well, listen, you don't budget for a fluctuation in gas prices, what would you tell them?
No one will budget for a 30% rise in gas prices, right? And this is because of a particular decision that was made.
Joel Brennan has pitched this idea of a gas tax holiday. Would you support that in any measure?
I'm not sure what exactly that would do for us to move forward, right? You know, that's only dollars that helps to actually rebuild our infrastructure here locally.
So, Matt, did he have a solution, or was he just kind of raising the red flag as far as this is an issue?
Yeah, so he's raising the red flag and saying, listen, in areas where we have non-essential services, we'll have to make some cuts to fill up that money to kind of plug that hole, so to speak. And they didn't really have specifics on that yet. I don't think they've necessarily gone into the numbers or budgeting. And obviously, it's going to depend on how these prices fluctuate. But a fascinating approach coming from the state's largest county, and coincidentally, a candidate running for governor as well.
Yeah, and he is right. Because I've done budgets, and you have to build in your energy costs, and you sort of set a range, but the range rarely goes that high, and I think he's the number 30%. That's a pretty extreme jump, and you know, I think it's a good strategy to certainly blame this administration, because some of the actions of this administration, the war in Iran, certain some of the policy stuff he's done, some of the other things with tariffs, have certainly made this a big question for voters, you know, when it comes to making decisions this fall. So he's certainly teeing up what is going to be a frequently heard conversation about this coming election.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he has for sure. Yep. Nope, go ahead.
I was just going to move on to, you also had another candidate, another Democratic candidate for governor. You had Missy Hughes on the show. She came out with a plan as far as how she would push back on Donald Trump, including what her strategy would be as far as sheriffs assisting with ICE detainers in county jails. And so what was she suggesting?
It was fascinating that she came out with several things. She wanted to talk about elections, and then she wanted to talk about ICE. As we're seeing local sheriffs contemplate, and they were really, especially at the height of what we were seeing in Minnesota, whether to more or fully cooperate with ICE, with these ICE detainers, holding people in the county jails for an immigration arrest. And she essentially came out and said she would work with the legislature and attempt to make that illegal.
Because there's still an open case, right? Wasn't that we've been on the show before, and we've talked about that there's a lawsuit trying to have clarity over this. Is there any movement on that lawsuit?
No. So and there was a fight about what court that should be heard in as well. Not only was it filed, but then it's do we want it before the state Supreme Court, which the ACLU wants. The sheriffs are looking more towards federal court. So no, that is all still in the courts. As she's kind of coming out with this approach, I believe one of the only, if not the only, to come out and fully say, let's just ban this in terms of the legislature passing any type of law.
He is Matt Smith, political director at Channel 12. We'll take a break here after the break. One more candidate on the Democratic side of the political aisle. That would be Kirk Bankstead. He got a lot of headlines last week, and I think he made some headlines with what he said on your show as well. And then just for those folks who are saying, where's Tom Tiffany? He will be on the show, I believe, the last week of the month in studio with both Kristen and I. So that'll be coming up. He's not running against really any challengers, so that's a different case. Not like the Democrats. We will take a break here on Point Taken, Kristen Steve, Monday edition, right here on 620 WTMJ. He's on the road today. Matt Smith, political director, Channel 12, joins us every Monday here on Point Taken with Kristen and Steve. All right, the trifecta of candidates, at least this week on Up Front, you rounded it out with probably, if not the most controversial, the loudest.
Well, I guess because last week when you were on, Matt, I asked if you were going to get him on, and you didn't know, because I think there's this question right now of how seriously we should be taking Kirk Bankstead's candidacy. So after talking to him, how seriously should we be taking Kirk Bankstead's candidacy?
Well, that's going to be a question for Democratic voters, I guess.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know at this point. I don't know, Kristen. I'm curious your thoughts on that. He's clearly going to make a lot of noise and attempt to make a lot of noise. And he clearly indicated no matter what the party does or what may happen or not happen at the convention, he's going to be there. So I guess I'm not totally sure at this moment.
Well, let's hear what he had to say on the show quickly.
If for some reason you didn't qualify for a speaking position or the party tried to prevent you from speaking, how would you respond to that?
I'd speak anyways. I'd speak outside the front door. And if they try to not let me speak, they're going to put me in office. I mean, let's be honest. If they restrict my speech as a fellow Democrat, they are going to do so much harm to their appearance, and they're going to do so much harm to the other candidates. I will win the primary if they don't let me speak. I guarantee you that.
Very confident guy.
I don't know if that's true, but so what does it take to qualify to be able to speak at the convention?
So it's going to be, I don't know the exact specific requirements. I have them, but I don't have them really in the hand of me in terms of what the Democratic Party requires. But it's going to be a fascinating conversation nonetheless. And I think as we look towards the summer, we talked about fundraising. He didn't want to talk about fundraising. He referenced his number of Facebook followers that he has. So I think the first filings when he becomes applicable are going to be revealing just in terms of, is there support for him? Are there Democrats out there who will sign his nomination papers and vote for him and do so more so than any of the other candidates who are already in the field?
You mentioned nomination papers because it's going to be really interesting to me. That, what is it, 2,000 or 2,500?
2,500. And yeah. This is the thing that's interesting. We ran into this a little bit when I moderated the event a week and a half ago of you can only sign for one candidate, yeah. But it's not your vote, but it does feel
right.
You know, and as everyone's trying to collect signatures of trying to convince people to sign your papers when people are not decided is a little bit of an issue. And I don't know how much of a challenge it'll end up being because 2,500 across the entire state is very different than like the 2,500 when I had to collect signatures for my husband in the 2 weeks they had when they were for the special election for mayor and you had to live in the city of Milwaukee. It was a much smaller denominator.
Yeah.
And so I would think that everyone's going to be able to get it, but he's also, you know, he's starting behind. I don't know how much, because he references his Facebook numbers, but it'd be interesting to see the distribution and how many of those people are in Wisconsin versus
that's
national.
That's the qualifier. A lot of people say he's got a lot of out-of-state support.
Yeah.
So we'll find out pretty quickly. Hey, real quick before I let you go, Matt Smith, what else did you talk about on Upfront this week?
So we talked about the sports betting bill, which is kind of fascinating because now you have like multiple lawsuits surrounding sports betting in the state. The attorney general wants to ban these prediction markets like Kelce and Coinbase. And now the federal government is suing back saying this is a federal issue. So we had the head of litigation for Coinbase. We had the attorney general on the show. All as this new law is introduced that would legalize it through the tribe. So there's just a lot happening with sports betting and a lot that's going to be tied up in the courts for a very long time.
Yeah, it is fascinating because so many people are sort of just dipping their toe in the waters of trying to do some of these things and making some of these prop bets, essentially. And I have not heard state to state what their sort of idea is on how this can play out. But one of the things Chris and I have talked about previously is there's just no rules for some of this stuff. And especially when you're talking about government action tied to a bet on one of these sites or platforms, it gets really shaky. I know I saw some news last week. There's an investigation into some of the military action, so a bet that was made shortly before, and even some of the things with the energy prices. So I guess it's to be continued.
Yeah, and I think everyone at this point thinks it's going to end up before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Probably.
So Wisconsin is just getting in on the action on the early level.
All right. Well, I know you're on the road. What else are you looking forward to covering this week before I let you go?
It'll be fascinating to see if we have any more activity from the candidates, right? Like it's kind of like a roller coaster at this moment. Some weeks there's a lot of activity. Some weeks it's a little lull. And then we'll have to see what comes from the rest of the week. It's only Monday in Wisconsin.
It's only Monday,
it's
Matt
only
Smith.
Monday.
It's not Monday
we'll see
without
if we see
Matt
any
Smith.
Commercials this week.
All right, Matt Smith, safe driving, safe travels. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good. Have a great week, guys.
All right, we'll take a quick break here on Point Taken. It's a Monday. We've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about, a lot of serious stuff as well, including, we'll get to it after the news break, but when politics and religion sort of cross paths, especially the gold statues, I've got a lot to say about that one.
Can't wait.
Yeah, we'll get to that, but we have a break here. Sounded like My Sharona for a second there, but it's not. Very close, though, that original drum beat coming in. Kristen and Steve on this Monday edition. Might as well stay on the Democratic side. Joel Brennan, I don't know if he's in hot water, but sort of twisted his words a bit.
Well, I think it's also, until we start getting some commercials up, I think the opportunity for candidates to kind of jump on when a candidate says or does something to make a little bit more news. We saw this with the Sarah Rodriguez leaked audio that people had feelings about, and the other campaigns jumped on that. And we saw this last week, and Journal Sentinel wrote an article about it, so I don't know if it caught fire as far as people having a lot of feelings about it, but I thought it was interesting to get your thoughts on it. So you've had Joel Brennan on. I think that was probably the most recent candidate that we've had on the show, I was gone that day. But, you know, it's an interesting situation where Joel Brennan is the only white man in the race. The other men are Vandella Barnes, David Crowley, obviously two black men.
Well, Kirk Banks, though.
I guess you're right. But I think this interview happened before Kirk Banks had joined. So I guess, okay. And I guess you also talk about Zach Roper and Brett Halsey. But
sure, yeah.
There's this disrespect that happens to those campaigns. But anyways, and so he was on Kristen Lierley's podcast. So Kristen Lierley, we know from she ran for Congress in the last cycle. She lives up near Green Bay. And she asked him the question of, you are the only white man in the race. And I think the way she phrased it was, is that an asset, a liability, or something that we're just not supposed to talk about? And he had a little bit of a word salad, answer in which he said, everybody brings different lived experience to this and everybody brings different qualifications. He said, I hope we get to a point in Wisconsin, in America, and maybe this is a step towards it, where we actually can just choose and it be based on vision. It be based on how hard you work, based on qualifications. I don't think we're there yet.
I don't think it's a bad answer.
And so from there, I think Crowley's campaign had something to say about it. I don't know if anyone else responded for and had a comment for that. But I think it's interesting because I think on the one hand, besides governor, we've had a woman win for Senate, a gay woman at that. We have had black people. We've had Bellar Phillips, Mandela Barnes, won for different statewide offices. And so to a certain extent, I tend to think that Wisconsin voters don't. Like, when people say, oh, Mandela Barnes didn't win in 2022 because he's black, I don't think that's true. I think, one, because he had already won statewide. And two, I think it was there, whatever amount of racism, sexism exists in the electorate in Wisconsin. I think as far as your campaign goes, you have to bake that into your campaign and adjust for it. But I don't know. I think we are ready as long as I think it was a bad answer because I think you just say it doesn't matter what race, what color. I think I'm the most qualified based on my experience.
Well, I don't know the whole context of the whole interview because he was on her podcast.
He was on her podcast.
So I'm sure he said a lot more than that. I mean,
do you have thoughts on that? Do you think we're quote unquote ready?
Well, I think Tammy Baldwin proves that we're ready for anything, basically.
Right?
Right? Because she's the most liberal senator there is measured by not me, but other people. She's openly gay, doesn't hide it, shouldn't hide it. And I think the Wisconsinites have overwhelmingly sent her back. It's not even close.
Yeah.
She wins in landslides. So, I mean, I guess I don't get the argument that we're not ready. As far as Mandela Barnes goes, I've said this before. To me, and I don't know what he does when we don't have elections going on. I don't see or hear from him at all. Most of the other candidates, I'm aware of them. Certainly David Crowley, he's working for us in Milwaukee County. Joel Brennan does a lot of things. Missy Hughes, all these. I hear about him. I see them at events. Mandela Barnes, to me, and maybe I'm not in the right.
You mean before he announced that he was running?
He just disappears. Now, maybe he's doing some great work that I'm not aware of, and he's always welcome to come on and talk with us. We have a cordial relationship. It seems like sour grapes or, you know, blaming it on race. I don't know. It just seems that's the easy out to make that claim. I would suggest that Joel have a better answer next time he's asked that question, though.
I agree. I think it was not a great answer, but I also wonder if there's a, because he kind of gotten Bruce Murphy over at Urban Milwaukee also wrote an op-ed saying that I forgot if it was his campaign manager or a donor, but there was conversations inside of fundraising calls that the campaign denied, but using that as a asset as far as what the identity politics of it all means in a general election.
I have no idea what their campaign's doing. None of these candidates are certainly stepping up, at least as far as I'm concerned, to make a name for themselves in a positive way. They're just all blending together, which is actually a great story because they're all different
TikTok.
In very unique ways.
What is it, 95 days?
I don't know. No, it's 95. Was it 95 last Friday? On Friday? I don't know. All right. After the break.
92 days ago.
I'm curious where you fall in the gold statue. If you didn't see it, Trump Doral, the big tournament. Massive gold statue. And it's always telling to me when the first thing the pastor said is, this is not an effigy, gold effigy.
It's something else.
Yeah, it's something else. Is it really? We're going to discuss that. We have local news update coming from Connie Weber. Lots more on the show today, including Dave Spano will join us from Annex. They wanna get my gold on the ceiling. Have you seen this story? So, look, I've been critical of the president for a lot of things, but his fascination with gold, you see it in Mar-a-Lago, you see it in the Oval Office now.
I love gold!
Yeah. And now he has I've seen two different accounts, 15-foot, 22-foot high statue. It's I think it's bronze, gold leaf, $60,000 in gold leaf to wrap it. It was consecrated at the Trump Doral golf course in Miami over the weekend. President said, our president, the real deal gold at Doral in Miami, put there by great American patriots, President Donald J. Trump. Before it was erected or unveiled, I should say, it was already erected. It was blessed by Pastor Mark Burns, who's sort of the president's spiritual advisor.
Guider.
Yeah. And he's also a candidate for Congress, by the way, in South Carolina. But the pastor, Mark Burns, made a big point of saying it's not a gold effigy because
not a gold calf.
Yeah, that violates a commandment. But again, if you consecrate something, doesn't that sort of make it a religious figure?
So who made it?
All right. So great question. It was made by Ohio sculptor Alan Cottrill. Yes, $300,000 worth of bronze.
Was it a gift?
Gift, yeah.
It was paid from the artist?
Commissioned and funded by a group of cryptocurrency investors who are promoting a meme coin. It's always about that, you know, the deal, art of the grift, called $Patriot. $Patriot is the cryptocurrency. Again, the sculptor created it. $300,000 for the bronze and $60,000 in gold leaf.
Okay, so it was commissioned and then gifted. Is it a gift to the golf course?
Trump Doral,
and to Trump.
And then
was it did he request for it to be blessed by Pastor Burns?
That I don't know.
Or was it a volunteer situation of like this should be blessed and have God's blessing over it?
Yeah. I should tell you that the sculptor is sort of at odds with the company, the crypto company.
Because they didn't pay him?
Yeah, I think there's a money issue there. So what do you think? Gold effigy or not?
What I think, have you watched The Boys?
No.
Do you know what it is?
I know it's a show.
So it's a show on Prime, on Amazon Prime. And it's basically if the dark side of superheroes, like if we actually had superheroes and beings who had that kind of power, how much more corrupt and especially in like a capitalist system. It's like a dark, the dark side of Avengers and all of that. And so the main antagonist is the character Homelander. And I would say we've watched all the seasons. I don't think we're totally up to date, but each season's getting a little bit more ridiculous. Like the first season was a little more veiled and now it's just very on the nose. And I don't know if that's because of bad writing or just because the world we live in now is very on the nose, because the creator of the show, Eric Kripke, literally, I think, put it on Instagram over the weekend, because as part of this, Homelander has like a messiah complex as far as he is wildly insecure, wildly narcissistic, the most powerful being in the entire world. And as part of this, there is like a growing cult of religion around his character and like the people who subscribe to him. And they literally have a scene where there is a gold figure of Homelander that's presented, and the showrunner, creator, Eric Kripke, put out a cross, like a side-by-side of just like, are we, and I think the caption was, seriously, what the F? As far as you can't even write satire about this, because the likelihood that it's actually going to happen is not zero.
It's just nuts. And I'm this will irritate my Republican conservative friends, but the litmus test for me is, if, let's say Joe Biden had done this, you would have crucified him, the last president, for days, weeks, maybe months, for doing some of the things, the whorehousing of the Oval Office with all the gold and the weird tchotchkes and all that stuff. It's just pathetic. And I know that it's always about policy, and that's the reason you just sort of overlook this stuff. But again, litmus test it. If Joe Biden did this, what would you say? And you would crucify him. So why do you let this go? And the other thing that's weird about this, unrelated but sort of related, the president has a friend in, it's Pastor Robert Jeffress. He speaks on Fox a lot about the religion and this administration. He made this comment, and I want to make sure I get it right. He said, President Trump has a better understanding of the Bible than the Pope. Okay, stop for a second. You may think the president's brilliant, but he's not. And pretty sure that my Pope, since I'm Catholic and I can speak to that, has a better understanding of anything when it comes to religion, especially Catholic religion, than Donald Trump does. So you can say stupid stuff like this, and maybe people are out there nodding their heads. I would think they would also be defined stupid if that's what they think. You can think about what you want to think about this president, and he may be fairly skilled when it comes to real estate, because he's certainly been involved in that arena for a long time. The rest of the stuff, no. And I'm sorry, this is a horrific example of excess. This is a president who seems to like that. And frankly, if you're a Trump supporter and you're just putting up with it, and you would not do that if the other side was doing it, you might want to examine your values. Because it's not a good look. Especially, and sorry, we're going to get to the next one. When everyone's out there, not everyone, but most people are feeling the squeeze of higher energy prices and tight budgets, and you're throwing up a gold statue to yourself, it's a bad look. We'll give you another bad look after the break. Secretary of Transportation this time. Also a very bad look. Next. I'm back on the road again. Thanks for tuning in on this Monday. It is it's like a classic spring day. It's like not that warm. The sun's out, so that makes it feel a little bit warm. But it's a funky weekend. I was down in Illinois watching my grandkids do all their sports stuff, which was a blast. And congrats to Max, won his tournament, his baseball tournament, did very well. So it is a time of year where it's spring, it's getting warm, we're thinking about taking our summer trips. Well, the Secretary of Transportation, Sean Duffy, and his very large family, was he have nine kids or something like that? Is it bigger now?
Is it 9 or 11?
I don't know. He's got a lot of kids. He did this reality TV show called The Great American Road Trip. It's going to start on YouTube leading up to the 250th
This is different than his original.
Yeah, so he was on Real World, and then he was on something after
that. One
of
the challenges, I think.
Yeah. And he was on Real World because he was a lumberjack at the time, and sort of, and I think he met his wife on the whatever that
show. She was also on, I think she was on a different season, though.
Yeah. So anyway, as part of this, again, I like the idea, but I mean, the timing sucks. He took his family across the country. His wife, if you don't know, is Fox News host Rachel Campos Duffy. Nine children they have. And the motto of the trip was to love America is to see America. And he says that in the trailer. More than a road trip, it's a civic experience. It's one of the most powerful ways to understand the vast, beautiful, complicated place we call home. All that's true. But the timing is wrong. Because we have the highest gas prices we've had in years. People's budgets are tight. And you go on this trip where you're courting sponsors, people that you have the government has contracts and relationships with, to sort of have fun when... Isn't it like real government work to do?
I guess that's my question, because this was the same. Like, how much criticism did Pete Buttigieg get when he went on paternity leave?
A lot.
When their twins were born, and so there, you know, there was those memes and those pictures out of him wearing a fake like breastfeeding thing and making fun of him for taking paternity leave, and the criticism also being, you have a very important job. Why aren't you doing your job? And again, the hypocrisy of, if you have a very important job, do your job. Why? How do you have time to do a five-part reality show is a good question.
It's just, again, the worst look at the worst time. These are tough times for people who are facing, their wages aren't matching the rate of inflation. Gas is now at, you know, they're talking we could have $5. I think it's $4.49 by me today. $5 a gallon gas. And you're taking a road trip for not just like a week. This is like months long.
So did they, when did they film this?
I guess last summer.
All right. But I mean, that's the thing. This is me playing a little bit of devil's advocate. So if they filmed it last summer before gas prices were like this, what do you do? Do you shelve the whole project just because it feels out of touch?
I might. I mean, or wait till the actual 250th because it's, you got a ways yet. Maybe the gas prices...
Well, not President that long. Said, it's May.
President said the other
we're
day
two
gas
months
prices
away from
are coming down.
We're less than 2 months away from July 4th.
Yeah, I know.
Let that sink in. Jeez.
The folks from Toyota, which is one of the sponsors apparently, said that it is proud to support initiatives that celebrate America's history, people, and spirit of exploration. All good reasons, and I love the storyline, but the timing's wrong. The sponsors, Boeing, Shell, Royal Caribbean, United Airlines, none of those responded. Because it's a bad look. They don't want to attach their name necessarily, although they've already done in the sponsorship thing. Especially when you have a Secretary of Transportation working closely with people who have government ties through their corporations. It's just a bad look. And again, I know this administration doesn't really care about that. Maybe they should. Because again, we talked about this Friday. Beyond fixing the results of the November midterm elections, it's not going to be a great result for Republicans. I think... We see no have to look any further than the legislature in Wisconsin. People jumping ship because it's going to be a bad look. They understand what's happening here. And you keep irritating people and poking at them with this kind of stuff. We all want a great America, but you have to have the right timing for this stuff. And you have to do it at a time when people aren't feeling the pressure of an ever tighter budget that they're just struggling to make to pay their bills.
Here's the, you want to hear what his response was on Twitter?
Sure.
So this is from the Secretary Sean Duffy, the actual account.
7 months to film this project.
Said, the radical miserable left has noticed our awesome Great American Road Trip trailer, and they hate it. It's too wholesome. It's too patriotic. It's too joyful. They're upset because they don't want you to celebrate America, and they definitely don't want you to teach your kids civics and patriotism.
Let me just...
That's not done yet.
Oh, okay.
So they tell lies to undermine the mission. Here are the facts. One, production costs were paid for by the Great American Road Trip Incorporated, not taxpayers. Zero taxpayer dollars were spent on my family. Two, neither myself nor my family received a salary or production royalties. The five-part series will be freely accessible by the public on YouTube. Three, the series was filmed in short 1 to 2 day production windows, such as weekends and the kids' spring break. Four, career ethics and budget officials at the Department of Transportation reviewed and approved both by both my participation and individual travel in accordance with federal rules. And five, under my leadership, DOT has become the most responsive, productive, and transformational in its history. Modernizing air traffic control, hiring 20% more controllers annually than my predecessor, moving grants and at record speed, and removing illegal truck drivers from the road. Don't let the haters stop you from visiting our spectacular national parks, monuments, and sites in honor of America's 250th birthday.
Let me use my pancakes example. I love pancakes. Don't eat them very often. And I like syrup. But I don't want my pancakes dripping, like just with a whole thing of syrup. This is what this feels like. It's like, we love that you love your family. We know you celebrate America. I don't doubt that Sean Duffy loves America, because I've talked to him many times in person and on the phone in interviews. No question that you're a patriotic dude. And I know you love America. You love your family. But there's also a matter of when something's appropriate. And when people are suffering, whatever you think about all of that, maybe you don't think people are suffering, this is not the time to do something like this. And it took 7 months to film. So must have been most of the summer and probably into fall. I'll probably watch it just to see what it looks like. Again, when things look bad, it makes other people feel bad. And if your goal is to make us feel great about America, the wretched excess of you and your family prancing around, you not doing your job, even though he says Department of Transportation's as efficient as it's ever been, I guess.
Would you have a problem with the show if it was not a government official?
Just some family?
Like, well, yeah, some family or some other celebrity.
No, because they're not a government employee.
Okay.
Especially a secretary. I mean, 7 months is a long time to be on the road. He said he was going to events.
On the weekends and whatever, but yeah.
I don't hate Sean Duffy. I actually like him. I've talked to him, like I said, many times. But it's a bad look. Just like a gold statue is a bad look. And again, if I see one more text that says gas prices were worse under Joe Biden, if they sucked under Joe Biden, these gas prices also suck. So if Joe Biden sucked, do the logical conclusion to that sentence. Figure it out during the break. She's not out of touch. She wrote an op-ed, she being Kristen Bride, that won the Milwaukee Press Club. Was the official title op-ed? What was it?
So it was best column, and I got gold, which was very exciting.
Always good to get gold.
And James Causey got second. He beat me last year, but James got second, and then Bill Luters from The Progressive got third. But yes, it was. I was very excited about it. But it was funny because James was sitting right next to me, and so someone got a really good picture of us kind of looking at each other, and then in the direct aftermath. I actually think Vince was the one who read my name, because Vince and
cool.
Susan Kim were the MCs for the evening at the Milwaukee Press Club.
Reunited.
Gridiron Awards.
Interesting.
It was a fun night. You know, it was it's similar to the, I didn't go to the WBAs this year, but it's always a fun night to get together with and see other people that you know, people you know of, and finally get to meet in person. Like, I finally got to meet Danielle Duclos, who we interviewed after her big Cap Times DPI report last year that really promoted some changes to happen as far as tracking teachers and conduct inside of schools. And so, but yeah, it's, you know, it's a fun thing to get recognized. And so, but it's like a little ironic because of the documentary, I'm not really writing this year. And so I will not probably have anything to submit for next year's awards.
Pretty cool, though. I mean, Causey's as good as it gets.
And he's been doing this for a very long time.
So you can say you're as good as it gets because you beat Causey. You beat the legend.
But yeah.
And we had that conversation on Friday. Remember, one of your bosses was here, and I go, Causey, tough to beat.
Tough to beat. But yeah. But
did he congratulate you after?
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. He was,
he's a good dude.
He's a very good dude.
Yeah, actually, I reached out to get him on my podcast, so hopefully that happens soon. All right. We'll take a break. We've got Dave Spano, the guy, CEO of Annex Wealth Management, will join us after the break for news, which is next right here on 620 WTMJ.
The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview with Annex Wealth Management CEO Dave Spano on Point Taken.
Dave, it has been a minute. How are you?
Good. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. We've missed you. Not that Brian isn't always great.
Brian is so smart.
So smart, so great. All right, let's get right into it, though, because as of this morning, President Donald Trump has said the ceasefire with Iran is on, quote, life support, and they had an unacceptable counter to Washington's proposal to end the war. So what happens now with gas prices and the market?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of times people conflate what's happening from the Straits of Hormuz, right, which is a geopolitical event, to the economy, to the market, to really what's happening in people's portfolios. And they're not always connected. Mm-hmm. And so right now the market is, you know, it's desensitized really to what is happening over there in the Straits of Hormuz. Now, the economy is not, right? So the market's one thing, and the economy clearly is under pressure because what is happening with gas prices. You know, I filled my tank up the other day, $5 a gallon is not fun. And so, you know, if it's affecting a lot of people, so that will make its way through the economy. It'll be higher prices for food, for transportation, for airline tickets, and that, of course, is going to cause a higher inflation number than people want. Where that goes with the Federal Reserve is a whole nother question. But we'll have to see if this is, again, some posturing. It doesn't look like it. But remember, Trump's going to China, too, and maybe something will come out of that.
All right, so inflation data, the CPI, Consumer Price Index report, comes out tomorrow. Producer Price Index, at least on Wednesday. What do you think those will show?
Yeah, so the producer price, of course, is the producers, what they pay for it, and do they transfer it on to the consumers in higher consumer prices? So I do think that spike that you will see in CPI is almost exclusively tied to energy. And so you're going to see higher CPI numbers. But, you know, you talk about the Federal Reserve and the bankers. Well, you know, you can argue Trump is a Federal Reserve banker with, you know, the pressure that he's putting on them. But I don't think that Kevin Warsh is going to move too much. I think he's going to be deliberate. And I think they're going to be thoughtful of what they do going forward. So right now they're in a position that they cannot lower interest rates quite yet. But remember, that's a tool. That is a tool that they can use if the economy begins to slow down. So if the economy begins to slow down on the second half of the year, which, of course, would not be good for the Republicans, then you might see some interest rates coming back down.
You mentioned the president's trip to China this week. What do you expect that will be about? What's the positive takeaways, potentially, for this president?
Well, you have to remember, you know, both sides of it. So for China, they have pressure, too, that they have to try to work through. I mean, of course, and a lot of that oil that's being blocked is their oil. So they have some of their economic issues. So if you have both are having some pain in the same issue, maybe you can get to a deal. But I think to the point, you know, what Trump can come away with, I mean, this is a big week. This is a big legacy week, not only for what is happening in Iran, but what could happen in China. So geopolitically, it is a big deal for him this week. But on the other side, you say, what are the positives that are happening right now? And again, and he does tie his success rate on what's happening with the markets. And the markets, again, here we are. You know, we kind of joked, Steve, earlier this year about 50,000 on the Dow, and here we are.
Oh, no, that was a joke. There was memes. There were memes about the 50,000 Dow.
Well, they're not far. I mean, they were 49,609 to start.
That was going to be my next question. I mean, there's basically strong corporate results, and so the markets are still going strong. It sounds like, I think Morning Brew this morning was talking about basically all the AI adjacent stocks are continuing to have a tear, and it does not seem like any of the doomers talking about the AI bubble popping, it's not happening so far, right?
Right. So far, that's always a dangerous. It's always a dangerous way to look at it. But this is what I can say to you, is that earnings growth, so, you know, how much does a company earn, is up 21% this year. And so at the beginning of the year, they were saying it's going to be a really good year. It's going to be up 13%, and then they raised it to 19%, and now here we are with actually at 21%. And so that's earnings. And then you've got margins. And margins are up 14.3%, and, you know, the all-time high is 14.5%. So that is really good, and that's the reason why you're starting to see a lot of these companies in the reports that they're getting. But this is the shocking part of this, Kristen, is that the market actually got cheaper. And people go, what? How did that happen? Because actually P.E. ratios came down. The earnings went up faster than the prices did, and so the P.E. ratio went down. And that's one measure that people look at and go, well, did it get cheaper? And it did. Indeed, it did. So that is really the backdrop that you're going to look for. But there's a lot of stuff coming up in some IPOs that we can talk about as well.
He is Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. We'll take a quick break here on Point Taken. Kristen and Steve on this Monday edition. Thanks for tuning in. If you missed any or all of our conversation with Dave, you can always find it on our podcast page at WTMJ.com or certainly wherever you get your podcasts. Quick break.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen. He's Steve. We are talking to Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. And before we get back to the news and the IPOs that you were talking about, there's a new event coming up, the Destination Retirement. Are we there yet? Coming up next week? No, this week, the 14th. Jeez. Man, May is really already clipping along, isn't it?
What day is it? Thursday.
There's this Thursday. All right. So tell us a little bit more about that event, Dave.
So Destination Retirement is, you know, people, where are you on your path, and are you going towards where you need to be? Are you, you know, in the direction that you need to be yet? So Thursday, March 14th, that's this week, 6 p.m. And one of the things that we walk through together is, you know, really, are we smart in how we invest? Am I financially ready for retirement? You know, how can we help? That's really the conversations that we have, and something we do every day and have been doing so for many decades. People come in with their mishmash, as I like to say, of stuff, and we put it all together and say, let's organize it and make sure that you're on path.
Yeah, and I've asked all the same questions because as I, you know, consider retirement at some point, these are things that questions you get great advice and great wisdom, and your professionals that work with you, Dave, are as good as it gets across all the different pieces of retirement, because there's many different facets of that. So you want to check them out in person? Yeah, it's a great event. All the events you do out there are great, and their webinars are awesome as well. Hey, real quick, I was because of this segment every Monday, I was forced to do a lot more homework than I used. And one of the things I saw, and you probably know this more than I do, I don't even remember the resource because I was gone, but I caught this on my phone, that individual stocks are really performing, some stocks are outperforming some of the funds and some of the safer ways. I guess that's my look at it, but I'm not a professional. How do you look at that?
Yeah, so, you know, for a long time, individual stocks were trailing. You know, people would say, why don't you just buy the index? Because then you know that you're going to get that performance. But what it was, the reason why that was happening, in my opinion, is because interest rates were abnormally held low. And that made all boats rise, you know, the ones that were even companies that probably didn't deserve it. So there has been this shift back to active management. And active management are individual names or active managed funds. And they have been performing better, you know, now it used to be just a small percent. Now it's much more than one quarter of them are doing better. And that's because of what's called active share or active management. They can pick out the winners and not the losers. You know, for example, the small cap index, 40% of those companies do not perform, but when you buy the index, you get all of those. So if you can go through the process and say, this company has sales growth, this company has earnings growth, and this one doesn't, you can call those out of your portfolio.
Got it. All right, well, this one's, I mean, I struggle to call this a fun one, but I saw this and it caught my eye. The most recent public health scare on everyone's lips due to media headlines is hantavirus and this cruise ship where there was an outbreak. And I'm not trying to belittle the people who've been infected, but I think I saw like a chart, like a yes, no chart as far as how worried anyone should be about it. And most of us really have nothing to worry about as far as any exposure to the people who are on that cruise ship. It is not something like COVID that's going to spread super fast. But regardless of that, apparently there's a huge surge in pharma and bio stocks because of this.
Yeah, well, you know, in the short term, emotion, right? And
yeah,
not thoughtful investing. But, you know, that same thing, if you go look at Polymarket, only 8% of people are afraid of getting the rat virus, right? But that doesn't mean it can't expound in a hurry. You know, I can certainly remember back when COVID was just starting to brew up, and we were talking about this, you know, in late December, early January, before that happened, about this virus that was expanding in China that was person to person. And of course, you know, we all know what happened from there. So hopefully this is contained. I guess the folks in Oklahoma are showing some signs. So I think they want to jump on that in a hurry. And obviously do not kiss a rat anytime soon.
Do not kiss a rat.
That's the wisdom. This one is, of the pieces of wisdom from Dave Spahn.
Frogs fine. Rats no.
Yeah, make a prince. Hey, Dave, this question came in email from when Brian Jacobson was on for you last week. Yeah. Often younger investors, let's say 20-somethings, they're facing tight budgets. They're just sort of getting started in their life. But is there a number that's too, like, what's the buy-in to like start that process when they may say to you or your company, I just don't have the resources right now. Is there a number that's too small that you would say, or would you say, hey, start small and big?
Yeah, I think the first piece of advice would be, you know, even if you just start your job, generally you go to a company and they have something like a 401k plan or something similar to that. And especially if they are matching, you should put in the money up to that match, because that match essentially is free money. And remember, that money is going in, you know, right out of your paycheck. So it's going in pre-tax and is growing tax deferred. To try to compete with that, you'd have to either pay taxes on it, get that money, and then, of course, pay taxes on their earnings. This company, I mean, in this example, you're getting pre-tax, tax deferral, and the company is matching. I would certainly would lean all the way into your qualified plan. And by the way, when people come to retire, Steve, and we've gone through this, a big part of their nest egg is their qualified plan, is their 401k right. plan. So the earlier you start on that is clearly the better.
Is Roth also part of that equation? Because
Yeah. So Roth can, you know, Roth is, you know, to the IRS is a four-letter word, right?
Right.
Because of the fact that you're never going to pay taxes on it, and it's got estate planning benefits to it. I mean, the problem with it is as you get older, you're going to have to convert it from a qualified plan to a Roth. You have to take it out and pay taxes on it. So you have to do some really in-depth planning on when to do that, how to do that, you know, what's in the best case scenario. And that's an individual-by-individual case.
All things right. you could probably learn at Destination Retirement.
Yeah,
I'll be there yet this Thursday, May 14th.
You got to start somewhere. And no amount is too small because, God, when I started in 84 in my 401k, it wasn't much, but you know, it all adds up after.
You started when you were 4 years old?
80.
Hey, 1984. Nice job.
That would have been something. That really be something.
So, you know, we got some IPOs coming up this week that are going to be right. interesting. I changed the topic. Isn't that nice?
That's all right.
Yeah, so, you know, you got Rocket Labs coming out, and that's going to be really interesting. And you got Celebros, and both of those are going to be big news. You're going to hear a lot about that over the next week, talking about
IPOs. What was the second one, Celebros?
Celebros, and what that is, it's an NVIDIA alternative, if you... Yeah, and so it's going to be a big deal, and then following that, you're going to have OpenAI and Anthropic, so a lot of talk in the next month or so about initial public offerings, IPOs. Why people think that is because, you know, it's exciting is if you can get in, which is a limited number of people, is because you get this pop generally at when it first comes out, right. if it's worthwhile. But to get into these things is very hard to do. But that doesn't mean once it goes from primary, an initial public offering, to secondary and starts to trade, that's generally where the general public can get into it.
All right, Dave, you can change topics anytime you want because you're the smart guy. He is Dave Spano, CEO of Annex Wealth Management. AnnexWealth.com, great place to get started. Literally, click the Get Started button. We'll talk to you down the road, Dave.
All right. See you guys. Thank you.
All right. Quick break here on Point Taken, 620 WTMJ. All right. All this week, we are playing some of our previous honorees, and we got a great one today, Dennis McKnight from last year. Listen to it.
Hi, I'm Joan Lean. I wanted to nominate
Detective Dennis McKnight
for saving my brother-in-law's life.
Currently been on the force for almost 12 years. In almost 3.5 years for a fire's detective.
My name is Shep Carmine, and my life was saved by Dennis and Rodney Banks.
I always see him at the gym. He's always on a treadmill, running very, very extensively as far as his routine. He appeared to be in excellent shape to be his age.
My brother-in-law is a very healthy guy. We never would have thought that he would be a candidate to have a heart attack.
I had gone to Planet Fitness Midtown just to work out, as I usually do, a couple times a week.
And his heart stopped.
I wasn't even going to go to the gym. I was there probably, I would say, probably 15 minutes. And I seen a crowd of people just standing around near the treadmill. I walked over and I noticed that the individual was laying face down. And after a few moments, he wasn't moving. Turned his head towards me and I noticed he had like a laceration from like the middle of his forehead. I just checked his pulse. He didn't have a pulse.
I had a cardiac arrest and a brain injury.
The retired firefighter that was also there, and he just helped me secure his head and just gently roll him over onto the bed of the treadmill, which is a hard surface. And you want to get him on a hard surface just to see if you possibly got to do any CPR or chest compressions. I checked his mouth to see if he possibly choked on anything, see his airway was pretty clear, and I checked his pulse again. And he wasn't breathing, so I just jumped in and started doing chest compressions.
If he hadn't done that, my brother-in-law would definitely have not survived.
I had never performed a lifesaver measure as far as that. Outside of training, no, that's my first time. You always got to rely on your skills and your craft, because you never know when you might need it. And it was just something that just was just natural for me just to jump in and just remember the chest compressions.
My first memory is I was still in the hospital. I had a couple of days to go, and then I was going to be transferred to a rehab hospital. My wife, of course, was there every day.
He is doing excellent now.
I'm doing great. I'm finished with my PT and OT, almost finished with speech, and I'm about a month into cardiac rehab over at Frater. I just started running last week, slowly. I've been to the gym once a week for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I'm starting to lift weights again.
What does Salute to Service mean to you?
The profession of first responders is amazing in and of itself, but the fact that Dennis was off duty and he still was that type of person that he couldn't just walk away, he had to help. And I think that's just what first responders are like.
It is recognized that people just stepping in to provide aid to someone who they do not know, or they do know.
One of last year's honorees, Dennis McKnight. We're going to play all the last year's honorees as we lead up to Heroes Week next week when we unveil our 5 honorees this week. And we are in the notification process and starting our interviews today. And we will reveal all those in the final half hour of all of the shows next week. It's always a fun week to celebrate. And somebody asked me why we do this. I want people to know the individuals. We talk a lot about first responders and departments and, you know, all those groups, but the individuals are the amazing people. They do great work every day, but their story needs to be told, and that's why we do it. So thanks to Mission 94, Waterstone Bank, who helps us make this all possible.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen. He is Steve. And in exactly 1 month, for the first time in more than 30 years, the FIFA World Cup is coming to the United States. And then for 40 days, there will be more than 100 matches happening all over the United States, Mexico, and Canada starting June 11th. And so joining us on the phone right now is Chief Executive Officer of the FIFA World Cup 26 New York, New Jersey Host Committee, Alex Lazary. How are you doing today, Alex?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Doing pretty well. So I guess, you know, I think obviously most of us know you as a former team executive for the Bucks. You also were very instrumental in getting the DNC to Milwaukee when it didn't actually end up happening in 2020. But how did you happen upon this job?
It was a very kind of lucky coincidence. I was working in the Biden administration as the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Travel and Tourism. The World Cup and Olympics were just part of the portfolio as, you know, those are massive tourism drivers. When it was clear that, after Kamala lost, her bid, and it was clear that my time in the administration was coming to an end, Tammy Murphy, who was the first lady of New Jersey at the time and our board chair, reached out and said they were looking for a CEO and asked if I'd be interested in serving. And, kind of felt like a once in a lifetime opportunity to be able to work on not just the World Cup, but also the World Cup final.
Yeah, I mean, it's so huge. I happen to be on a couple of my international trips in Europe during the World Cup once when I was there the night that France had won a couple World Cups ago.
2018?
I don't know when it was. Yeah, sounds right. It was nuts. And so this is sort of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a lot of Americans. Like, what is this going to feel like? What is success going to look like? It's not just hosting games. There's a lot to this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we look at, I think, this for as a legacy item for in a few ways. I think, one, the demand and competition for hosting these type of mega events is just become more intense. There are more people who are bidding on these, more countries, more cities, more areas that are hoping to put on these type of prestigious events. And I think what we want to be able to show is that the United States is still the place to put on the biggest and greatest sports and entertainment events. We are about to end there the decade of sports here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And the World Cup is the kickoff for it. And so you've got, you know, the World Cup in 2026. You've got the Olympics in 2028. I think the Rugby World Cup is coming here. Mm-hmm. You've then also got the Women's World Cup in 2031. There's a Winter Olympics in, I believe it's 2034. So a lot happening in the U.S. And if you kind of look at this decade of sports, what we really want to be able to show is that the U.S. is the place to have these events, that it is still the greatest place to host these events. When I was at the tourism department, we actually saw that 15% of all tourists were putting sports on their itinerary. So So these are massive tourism drivers, which is a huge part of our economy. And I think we really want to make sure that we're showing that the U.S. is still the top destination for travel and tourism. And sports and entertainment is a big way that you're getting people off their phones and, you know, into real, IRL situations where they're able to go and experience something great, which is going to drive a bunch of economic impact.
So 2 cities in Canada, 3 cities in Mexico, and 11 cities in the U.S. But the only, I don't even know if you consider it Midwest or not, but Kansas City is the closest one to Milwaukee. So what went into choosing which cities were going to be hosting games? Was it about infrastructure, hotels? What was kind of the, because I would imagine I'm kind of surprised to not see Chicago on the list.
So I believe the bidding started, I think, almost 8 years ago, maybe even a little longer. And so no different than, when we did the DNC and the RNC in Milwaukee, right? The bidding starts, cities put in their bids, they go through the RFP, have to make a commitment to say, hey, we want to be a part of this, and that we believe that this is going to be a special event for our city and for our region. You then also have to make sure that you can fulfill the infrastructure requirements and the ability to put on the matches. A lot goes into the bid, working also, you work with U.S. Soccer, in putting in the bid since they are the host country federation. I think Kansas City was really the only city that was in the Midwest that put in a bid, or at least that got through all the bidding. I obviously wasn't around 8 years ago when they started this, but it's a very intense process. I've been working a little bit on this for the Women's World Cup, and it's a lot, not just on the games, but also base camps where teams can stay. The stadiums need to have the calendar open, right? And a lot of these stadiums have a lot of different events, concerts, et cetera, that all come into it. So it's not as easy as just, hey, we want to do it.
Yeah.
You go through the bidding process and it can take a while.
We're talking to CEO of the FIFA World Cup 26, New York, New Jersey, host committee, Alex Lazary. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about prices, because that has made some headlines as far as what a ticket will cost you. Stay with us. This is Point Taken. Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen Bry, talking with Alex Lazary, CEO of the FIFA World Cup 26, host New York, New Jersey host committee. And so part of this is talking about the price of tickets right now. And so how does that actually work? I mean, obviously, we know for anyone who goes to concerts that the resale market in America is always kind of insane. And it doesn't surprise me at all as far as tickets being resold at a very high cost. But how do you actually who sets the original ticket price?
So FIFA sets the ticket price. We actually don't handle anything inside the stadium. Everything we do is outside the stadium. And so we at the host committee really look at ourselves as built on 4 pillars. So we handle security coordination between the region for the games, transportation. So we just released our mobility plan a few weeks ago, fan engagement and economic impact. So, we are responsible for putting on the FIFA Fan Fest. So we've got our 5 borough activation in New York City, where there will be, activations in all 5 boroughs. Those are all free. There will be a Jersey fan hub in New Jersey at Sports Illustrated Stadium. And then Governor Sherrill just announced, 34 watch parties all throughout the state of New Jersey. So our job is to really make sure that that we're providing affordable and accessible experiences outside the stadium for fans that are going to come visit. We're expecting over 1 million people to visit the region over the course of those 40 days, over $3 billion of economic impact. Most people who come to the World Cup aren't actually even expecting to go to the stadium, quite frankly. They come, they want to be part of the World Cup experience, want to be able to watch and celebrate and be a part of everything that's going on. So we're really excited to welcome the world, not just to our region, but to the entire country, and for them to get an authentic experience whether they're going to the game or enjoying our fan fest.
You mentioned the other big events, Women's World Cup and some of the other ones. How much sharing goes on between the organizers of these massive, you know, world interested events? I mean, they're just the big, as big as it gets.
Yeah, I think that the, you know, when you're putting on these events, you know, I'll call LA28 just to kind of get a sense of, hey, you know, I know we're 2 years before you, but what are you guys seeing during the planning process? You know, I went to the Winter Olympics to just kind of see what that looked like and observe. You know, when we were with the Bucks, I'd always joke, you know, going to the games is my job. You know, my wife didn't love that traveling with the team and going to games was part of the job. And now I'm like, I have to go to the Super Bowl. I have to go to the Winter Olympics.
Have to, yes.
But in all honesty, like, the best way to learn how to put on a mega event is you have to go to the events.
Yeah.
And I tell my team all the time, I told them last summer, I tell them all the time, go to as many events at MetLife Stadium as possible. You need to know the stadium like the back of your hand. You need to know how to get there like the back of your hand. Same thing, go to events at where our fan fests are, just so you know what it's like. What is the experience like? What made it good? What made it bad? That is the best way that you can serve the customer when you're putting these on. That doesn't hurt that they're also fun and enjoyable to be at, but that is going to be the best way, is you've got to kind of be a part of them to know what it's like to put these on.
Absolutely. I mean, pretty fun job. But what has the political climate been like as far as doing this job, knowing over the last 15 months where the United States has been on immigration? Obviously now jet fuel is way up. And so do you feel that in the logistics of planning an event like this, or are you fairly insulated from it?
I mean, like, you're definitely seeing, you know, you'll see a, you know, when you're, you know, trying to, it's I think more the supply and demand, honestly, of having all, you know, 11 host cities all trying to vie for, you know, buses and security barricades and all the things you need to secure the stadium, right? There's just a supply and demand of it. This also happens to be the 250th anniversary of the United States. Mm-hmm. The Olympics are in a couple years, right? There's a lot going on this summer. And there's only a finite number of buses, personnel, barricades, you know, et cetera, you know, stages, screens, right? Like you're all fighting for the same thing. So, you know, trying to reserve and plan, as far out as possible, so that you can have a sense of, you know, so that you can limit those costs. You know, that's part of these mega events, is all the things that you need to put them on. At the end of the day, it's, you know, my belief that the economic impact of them will be great. This is a big part of kind of the, you know, of being not just our region, but being the U.S. is that, you know, we hold these prestigious events, and when you come here, they're bigger and better than ever. And so I think that's what we're trying to show and put on. And, you know, we saw this with Club World Cup last year. You know, I think, you know, you saw it, just a huge success, and shows the popularity of football here in the United States.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Alex Lazary, good luck. I know the month countdown is on. And so thank you for your time today. And I can't wait to, I probably will not be watching any games in the city, but I'll be certainly watching all the games from maybe the Third Street Market Hall right here.
I hope so. It's going to be an incredible summer. You know, the World Cup is always one of the best experiences. So hopefully the U.S. Can put on a good show.
Can't wait to watch it. Thank you, Alex. All right. We'll come back after this and wrap up today's show.
Feeling good on a Monday. Hope you enjoyed the show today. We'll be back tomorrow. We got guest Kate Duffy, our monthly contributor, will join us. Moms for Good, I think is her. Motherhood for good. Yeah, I shortened it.
Because we all have a big thing to talk about, because it sounds like Governor Evers and the Republicans have come to a deal over property tax relief.
Hold on a second. So Republicans and Democrats can work together for the good of the taxpayers and residents of
Well, I don't think it's actually signed yet, but it sounds like at least while we've been on air, a deal has been announced.
Wait, I thought we were just going to fight.
And we'll see if the special session happens and it can actually pass and the governor can sign it into law, because it sounds like there's both some relief, so some compromise. Imagine that. Mm. Some direct payments, some relief for funding for schools and lowering property taxes, and no tips, no tax on tips and overtime. So we'll have to get through the details of that, but some breaking
good
news
stuff in there
at the end of the show today.
All right, so we'll talk about that tomorrow. And if you have not signed up for our newsletter, which Kristen did most of the heavy lifting this week because she was gone the previous week, it was brilliant. It's a lot of good stuff in it, a lot of fresh content. There's a fresh overtime in there if you haven't seen that one.
We did a funny video on
zombie apocalypse.
Zombie apocalypse and who's more likely to join a cult.
Yeah.
Although the best response was that if the cult had pretty women in it, you would likely be more likely to join
the
cult.
Certain pretty women. Yeah. It was a qualifier. You'll have to watch it to find out what I'm talking about. Anybody who's a longtime listener of mine knows Heather Graham always factors into that.
Isn't she on a new show?
She is.
One of the morning shows that airs in front of us. I saw her being interviewed recently.
I believe. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think she's going to be part of the White Lotus.
Oh.
Yes. So, of course, I'm a big fan of White Lotus and a big fan of Heather Graham. Worlds Collide, I'll have to be
watching. You know what I don't? I've actually pitched this to Charlie Behrens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he has not done a sketch yet.
Yes.
Where White Lotus goes to Wisconsin Dells.
Charlie, if you're listening, that's an idea for free.
Let me be in it, too. I feel like I could really bring something to that sketch. We can have a revival of the last time we did a
self-promotion
sketch together.
All right, we got to get out of here. News is next, 620 WTMJ. See you tomorrow.